Welcome to another Illinois Football Podcast. I'm Joe Stevenson from the Northwest Herald in Crystal Lake, and I'm joined by Kankakee Daily Journal sports writers Steve Soucy and Kyle Neighbors. And guys, in 8A this week, another big dog went down as Glenbard West, the 7A state champ last year, beat Homewood Flossmoor 28-21. Another high seed, number 3 Palatine, survived against Lions 20-17 in overtimes. In overtime, what are your impressions from what we saw in 8A this week in the second round?
Well, I think starting with the Homewood situation, I think it might be time to reassess that maybe the Southwest Suburban Conference wasn't quite as good as we thought it was. Most of the heavy hitters have been bumped off, and Lincoln Way East is basically our only one left. So maybe that league in general, not to take anything away from Glenbard West win over Homewood Flossmoor, but maybe that league just maybe isn't quite up to the level of maybe some of these other leagues that have kind of emerged and showcased themselves as being a little bit better this year.
Yeah, Glenbard West kind of seems like a team that you don't want to see in the playoffs anyway. Last year, you know, they were really good in 7A, and now they move up to 8A, and here they are still in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, I mean, that's an argument that can definitely be made. I mean, that's a team that has obviously shown its ability to win, in this type of year, whatever class they're in. So, I think they're certainly a team you don't want to see on the bracket. It looks funny. This is just a strange year. Seeing so many of these, we talked about it before, seeing so many of these high seeds that are still alive. You got a 20, you got a 24, you got a 26. But I think it speaks to the depth of the class and the fact that some of these 2 and 3 lost teams are pretty darn good football teams.
Yeah, Huntley from our area being one of those, a 3-loss team, looked really good again Saturday, taking out Fremd 38-30. That game was actually not as close. With about 4 minutes to go, Huntley was up by 22 and kind of, took care of business most of the day. Fremd got a couple late scores, but I'm really impressed. Huntley, I thought, was going to be a pretty good team all year. Lost to some real quality teams, and now is playing its best ball, beating McHenry in the last game of the regular season, taking out Stevenson last week, and then this week getting Fremd. So I thought Huntley might be at this point last year, and it was a disappointing loss after a 9-0 regular season to Oswego in the second round. And now here the Raiders are with a lot of different players, but Eric Mooney really running that offense well.
Yeah, I have to admit, when I looked at the results from the weekend, that was one that kind of stood out to me. I know you guys have talked about Huntley and talked about the things that they could do, early in this year. But, I'll be honest, I kind of put them on the back burner once they lost to West Aurora. I wasn't sure if they had this in them. I obviously didn't expect them to reach the quarterfinal stage. But they certainly have performed at the right time. They've knocked off now two straight teams where, on paper, it looked like to me they should be the underdog. And now they've got, obviously, an immense challenge with Loyola. But, right now, the way they're playing, I don't think I really want to just hand over that semifinal berth to Loyola. You never know.
Go ahead, Kyle. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, each of these last 2 weeks, I thought Huntley was going to be in real trouble, and they've handled their business in pretty convincing fashion. So, yeah, I'm with Seuss. You expect Loyola to be in there in the state semifinals, but I don't think anyone wants to face this Huntley team at this point.
Yeah, I'm eager to see that game Saturday. I think that'll be fun to see a team like Loyola. We don't see a large school like that out here this way. We'd certainly have some state powers, but that should be fun. And I'm with you, Steve. After they lost to Loyola, they were actually at one point in the season here 3-3, and a lot of people around here, around the Fox Valley Conference, were even wondering if McHenry would give them a game in that last week of the regular season. They've really turned it on here at the right time. So, by the way, we were talking, and we'll get into this a little later with a couple of our other teams. We were talking this season about talking up the Fox Valley Conference, that we thought it was going to be maybe one of its best years. FVC went 4-0 this weekend, and that was pretty remarkable.
Yeah, that's a statement to where they're at. I mean, right now, because there have been a couple of conferences that have really stood out, and the Fox Valley is obviously one of them. And some of them are not your usual suspects this time of year. So it's been a real interesting year in that sense. I kind of got a feeling that was going to happen. I wouldn't have been able to detect which conferences they were, just because it just felt like this was a year, especially with some of the new teams that have popped up in the field. This was the year that maybe some other leagues would make their mark, and it certainly looks like the Fox Valley is one of those.
Any other games that jump out at you in 8A? It looks like Maine South again, another three-loss team that's doing really well. And Lincoln Way East was touted pretty highly early in the year, took a couple losses, and now here they are in the quarterfinals.
Well, those are both interesting to me. The thing that kind of stands out to me, and I was kind of chattering this team up a little bit heading into the postseason, but I'll be honest, I'm surprised they're still here after the road that they've taken. Edwardsville is really doing some work because, I mean, we'll get to it in a little bit. I was really impressed with a Southwest Prairie team that I saw this weekend, and Edwardsville just handled a team on the road that they had to come up here for that game, and they beat Oswego handily. So I thought that was an impressive win for them. They get Glenbard West now, but I mean, they beat Oak Park River Forest in the first round. Now they beat Oswego. I'm really impressed with what they've been able to do. I think they've got a tall task of this week with Glenbard West, but Glenbard West does have to come down to Edwardsville. So we always see how the effects that has on people, and that was something that was really, really telling to me, is that this is a legitimate football team, and I think they definitely have served notice.
All right, guys. Well, let's look at 7A, and we'll start with a team that you guys cover, Bradley Bourbonnais, the number one seed. That was a shock on Saturday, I think, to most people when they saw Plainfield North, the 16 seed, 49-20. What happened with the Boilermakers?
Well, it was a straight domination. I mean, and that score isn't really reflective of where that football game was at. I mean, it was 42-7 at one point. I mean, it was the Tigers were just all over it. I mean, I had some people tell me before the game that they'd had some injuries and they were healthy, and it was their record at the time wasn't really reflective of how good they could be, and they just absolutely dominated in the trenches on both sides of the football. Defensively, they were in Bradley Bourbonnais' backfield all day long. Leon Burtis, who's been so good for the Boilermakers for this entire season, really couldn't get anything going. And finished with single-digit rushing yardage, which is crazy to me based on what he's done this year. And they forced him into throwing the football. And when you forced Burgess to throw the ball 25 times in a football game, you have achieved your goal. And that's what they did. And then, I mean, offensively, Ty Huseman, good solid running back. Not going to blow your doors off, but the credit goes to that line, because at times he'd be getting 5 or 6 yards off the ball before a Bradley defender was even breathing on him. So a heck of an effort by them, and I would not be astonished to see this team continue to win, because they are pretty good.
Steve and I had just talked on Friday night about how, you know, Bradley had gotten to 9-0. We didn't expect that, but they had done it in such a way that they had to be almost perfect to get to 9-0. I mean, they weren't the most talented team. They were a very good team. But as I was saying earlier in the year, I didn't think they were a top 2 or 3 team in the state. And we were kind of expecting a dud at some point. I don't think anyone would have expected it to come in such lopsided fashion, though.
Yeah, I mean, they were in the game. I mean, it was from almost the drop. It was like, okay, Plainfield North marched down the field on the first drive, took the ball, and rammed it right down Bradley's throat, and then they got it back after a 3-and-out and did it again. I mean, it was complete domination, and it silenced a very big crowd very early, and it was a pretty quiet afternoon in Bradley-Bourbonnais.
I think the other big surprise in 7A was a game up here in our area where Jacobs, the number 28 seed, takes out Batavia 28-14 on Saturday. It's kind of a funny game. All the scoring was in the first half, but you know, Jacobs is a team pretty much heavy laden with junior players, so this could really bode well for the future. And they see Fenwick this week, so first time Jacobs has won two playoff games. Technically, the Golden Eagles were in a quarterfinal back in 1979, which you only had to win one game to get in a quarterfinal at that point. But a great postseason for Jacobs so far. Did that one surprise you guys a little bit?
Yeah, Jacobs is certainly not the team I think of when I think a quality football program. So, and Batavia's had such a good run over this last 4 or 5 years that was certainly eye popping when I saw that score come across.
Yeah, there were a couple of games this week that I thought, I mean, not that they were breezes by any stretch of the imagination in the second round, but I kind of booked Batavia for a quarterfinal slot there, to be completely honest with you. I didn't see that coming. I mean, Jacobs kind of middled its way through the regular season and then had a public league team in the first round, so you couldn't really measure what they got out of that week either. So, I was pretty surprised by that when I think of the results that surprised me this weekend. That was definitely a top fiver, no doubt.
Yeah, me too. And Lauren Strickland, their running back, had a great game. I think he had 13 for 125 and a long touchdown. Also ran back a kickoff, and their defense just did a really good job against Batavia. So, kudos to Coach Mitz there, and they get Fenwick this week. Steve, you call it a great game, maybe the best game in 7A this week. East St. Louis, 32-28, scores with 3 seconds left. Rayondas Estes throws a pass to Jeff Thomas for 23 yards, and they beat Glenbard North. That one lived up to what you had thought it might be.
Well, did you guys happen to see the clip of that final play?
I didn't.
Well, I did, and you say it's 23 yards, and I'm not discounting that, but it seemed farther than that, and if you've seen the play, Thomas made a play on the ball, but the throw against pressure was really impressive. So, I mean, Thomas gets a lot of the acclaim right there, but they're not playing right now without the efforts of their quarterback, because he made a heck of an effort on that and just to get it done. And, I mean, I was kind of monitoring that game all afternoon, and I was noticing, I mean, it didn't surprise me that Glenbard North was in the football game, but down to the wire there, it looked like Glenbard North was going to win the football game, and that was a real hard way to lose if I'm Glenbard North, because they did a lot to keep that East St. Louis team in check, and then to just have them steal it away at the last possible second, pretty impressive effort by them, because it wasn't the greatest play I've ever seen by any stretch of the imagination, but it was certainly something that you would have thought would have been hard to pull off in the scenario that they were in.
Yeah, I did see a quote in a story from Coach Darren Sunkett from East St. Louis talking about Estes and the heart that he plays with and the leadership that he brought and coming up with that last play. So what else jumped out at you guys from 7A?
You know, to me this was kind of a funny bracket. I mean, it seemed like there were a lot of games where two really, really good top flight teams were running into each other, like East St. Louis and Glenbard North. And then there were other games where there were two teams playing that, to be honest with you, I had no idea what was going to happen. The one thing that I think finally maybe I just have to reluctantly tip the cap is to Rolling Meadows, who moved into the quarterfinals. And I've been kind of doubting them because of their schedule the entire time. Beat a pretty decent Lincoln Way Central team on Friday night. And now we'll have a major challenge on their hands. But if you would have asked me before the postseason started if I thought Rolling Meadows was going to get to the quarters, I would have said, nope, I don't think so, just based on the fact that I didn't think their schedule was very strong and they hadn't really beaten anybody of quality yet. But they keep winning, so it should be an interesting game for them, I think, with Bennett on Saturday night.
Well, we move on to 6A, and I guess you guys are back on the St. Lawrence bandwagon. You were on it early. I think you were off for a while, and have you jumped back on after knocking out Crete?
I think I'm that guy that's running behind the train saying, hey, can I get back on? I mean, I think that would describe my position right now.
Yeah, I'm kind of ashamed of myself for ever jumping off.
Yeah, I know a lot of people were thinking Crete might come out of the South half, that was a really talented team and the state runner-up last year, but they get knocked out here. But you guys had spoken well of St. Lawrence early in the season, thought this team had some potential, and now they seem to be reaching it.
Well, a really talented running back in Faison Smart. He's just a really good player. So And if they could get all their components back in place, there were some issues there. There were some health issues. They just weren't at full steam. It certainly looks like they are now, and I think they would have to be to do what they did in their battle with Crete Moni the other night. I mean, a lot of people were like, hey, it'll be a Crete Moni Springfield Sacred Heart Griffin semifinal game. And I think Springfield wanted that too after Crete beat them last year. But obviously St. Lawrence brought all the skills that made us like them so much to begin with back to the table. Won't be easy this week. Lamont's a really solid football team, but I think that's a game that they can win as well. So it should be interesting to see how that all plays out.
Well, speaking of semifinals last year, I saw the rematch, and I saw probably the best performance, as good a performance as any team put forth all weekend, as Prairie Ridge not knocked off. That sounds more like an upset. Prairie Ridge beat Montini 51-24, ends the Broncos' amazing string of 7 consecutive state championship game appearances. Samson Evans, the quarterback, running the option. You guys might have seen these numbers, but here they are. 21 carries, 238 yards, 7 touchdowns. He had one call back. He had a kickoff return, like 94 yards, call back, and then later in the drive went ahead and ran 58 yards and still scored on that drive. So, and it was funny, on his last touchdown early in the third quarter, he ran one for 44 yards. A defender knocked off his left shoe about the line of scrimmage. He ran with one shoe. Both his calves were cramping up, and he finally got in the end zone and just laid down. He was done for the day. They had a running clock. I said, I joked to one of their coaches, I said, this is his Rod Tidwell moment in the end zone. He's laying there, just let me enjoy this for a minute. but it was an amazing performance. It was kind of, I think, a culmination of a year. A lot of pent-up frustration, a lot of motivation after losing to Montini in the semis last year and then seeing the Broncos win the state title. Prairie Ridge was really ready for this rematch and got some revenge.
It was one of those rare situations for me as I was watching this kind of develop on Twitter. I'm sitting there going, how many is that now? I mean, I felt like I was losing track because on my feed, I kept seeing his name like all over the place. And 15 minutes ago, and 6 minutes ago, and 8 minutes ago, I was like, "How many is this now?" So, yeah, it was obviously quite a performance to be able to witness, because it certainly seemed very much so from my following of it a long distance away.
Yeah, go ahead, Kyle. I'm sorry.
No, I was just gonna say it takes something special when you're doing that to Montini as well.
Definitely. You know, this might not have been one of Montini's great teams, but it's still Montini. There's that tradition, and there's a lot you're up against. And, you know, through the years, I don't know if you guys have crossed paths with Montini coach Chris Andriano very much, but I have several times, because they had a great rivalry with Marion Central when they were in the Suburban Catholic Conference. And I just find him to be a really first-class guy. I really like him a lot. I think it's a first-class program and one of the great programs in the state. One of my favorite stories is in 2006 when Brian Bulaga was at Marion Central. I think a year or two before, Montini had won state. That was not a particularly great Montini team. They finished 5-5. Marion beat him the first round of the playoffs. Coach Andriano went up to Hurricanes coach Ed Brucker and asked to talk to the team. And he told them right there on the field, he says, go get a state championship. And I just thought that was really neat, that here's a guy, you know, that's your rival, and he's telling, you know, he was rooting for them and giving them words of encouragement. I thought that was great.
Yeah, my experience with him isn't as much as yours, obviously, Joe, but I concur. In the times that I've crossed paths with him over various things, just full class, and I mean, I'm sure he you know, understood that this wasn't, like you said, one of the better Montini teams, but got beat by a program that has its eyes on the big prize, and deservedly so. Like I said, just a good guy that seems to have a proper perspective on where everything falls into place.
Absolutely. I asked him about, you know, the run, and he said, you know, I was just lucky to be the guy out in front. It wasn't me. It was a lot of great assistant coaches and a lot of great players and stuff. And you know, downplayed his role, which we all appreciate and respect, but you know that it is a lot him, too.
Oh, without doubt. I mean, there's definitely something that can be said. Because, you know, I often wonder about this when you have a guy that they're 6A, the dog's
kind of. 6A, that's it.
Yep. So, I mean, it's obviously something that I wonder about sometimes. If you take one of these guys that has a lot of success in a program, you know, how much or how long would it take him to rebuild a program that hasn't had it? And I'd be fascinated to see that kind of experiment conducted with him because, I mean, he obviously knows what it takes, the foundation that's required, and all the things that that you have in order to have a program that can repeatedly crank out incredible levels of success.
Yeah, by the way, Coach Andriano just reached 300 career victories with their first-round win over St. Ignatius, too.
Is it just me, Joe? Maybe I'm off base on this. Does it seem like there seems to be a lot of people joining the 300 win club this year, or is that just me? It seems like there's there are three, four, five guys, and I don't think there are that many in it to begin with. So
I think they said the other day that he was the ninth in the state, but I don't know. I wasn't aware of who else had done it this year. I hadn't been paying close
attention. I think there were a couple more. Maybe I'm thinking about the 200 win club or whatever it is. But even then, there's not a whole heck of a lot of those.
Yeah.
Well, didn't Jeff Reince at once do it this year? Yeah.
Correct. But I've heard of a couple of other ones. I think maybe it's the 200 win club that I'm confusing it with. But I mean, we've got one in our area that's been here forever in the 300 win club, and Rich Zanani at Bishop McNamara. But I know when I did the story on him getting his 300 win, there were only four at that point in time. So, you know, it's a very exclusive club, and obviously I'm not surprised to find out that he's in it.
Yeah, Cary Grove, the number 3 seed in the North, also rolled, had no trouble against Grays Lake North, and we'll see DeKalb next week. And in the South, then, you mentioned Lamont, the top 2 seeds down there, Lamont and Sacred Heart Griffin, both won big as expected. Really no other surprises, I guess, in 6A, right?
No, I didn't really see anything that really stood out to me. I was a little surprised how easily DeKalb won, but I did still think they were going to win that football game.
Yeah, I did too. And yeah, that was a pretty big score over number 2 Antioch, 36-3. But anyway, going on to 5A, what was going on with Peoria Central and Decatur Eisenhower? Peoria wins 96-40. Almost one of those things you don't have to look up, but that is a state playoff record for points scored for one team in a game.
Well, it's one team in a game, but shockingly, the following day, the two teams in a game, that record fell the following day. So we had another team go over 90 on Saturday. So that was very weird. I don't really know exactly what happened in this game. I was kind of following it third hand. The one thing that stood out to me, which explains it a little bit, was Decatur Eisenhower fumbled 6 times. And Peoria at one point in that game in the third quarter scored 3 touchdowns in a minute and 27 seconds.
Oh, man.
So, I mean, that kind of explains a little of it. Now, what I don't get is why they scored twice more after the running clock started. So, that kind of rankled me wrong, to be completely honest with you. I don't know the situation behind it, and I know the old adage when you've got reserves in there, you can't tell them not to score, but maybe it happens once, but I don't really get why it needed to happen twice. So, I mean, that kind of rankled me a little bit.
I understand what you're saying. It's 96. That just seems like an awful lot. But, by the way, the 136 is a Class 5A playoff game record, I believe, too.
Yeah.
And you know, they could have, hopefully, I wish they could have lent some offense to Vernon Hills and Nazareth. That was the weird score of the weekend, 10-2. Vernon Hills moves on.
That's the one where whenever I see scores like that, I just think that it's probably a mistake on score zone that they'll eventually correct it. I mean, they seem to happen every once in a while. You see those games where, like, somebody wins, like, 7-3, and I'm like, how did that happen? So then but that one's even weirder with the 10-2. I was just like, I don't think that's right. And then I went and looked it up, and I'm like, it is right. Goodness.
I saw a pretty good game Friday night. Marion Central, the number 14 seed in 5A up here, beat Hillcrest 30-14. But that was a really tight game for right down to the end. And actually, Marion had some anxious moments because it was moving the ball pretty well, but only had scored once. And Hillcrest hit on a couple big plays. One was a kickoff return by Marcus Garrett. And another was a reception by Garrett, and was leading 14-7. Marion had the ball and was moving. Quarterback Gavin Scott, who is so integral to what they do, sprained his right ankle, and they had to put a freshman, Patsy Ricciardi, in to replace him. And the Hurricanes finished the job, though. Their defense was outstanding down the stretch in the fourth quarter, gave them a couple short fields, and they come away 30-14. So now they see Vernon Hills this week, and Sterling up in the north looks strong again, beating Rich Central 41-13.
You know, the one thing about that Hillcrest team, you saw Marcus Garrett do some good things, but that's not even his best sport. So, I mean, he's a heck of a basketball player too. So, it's interesting what that Hillcrest program has done. So, I mean, kudos to them for hanging in that football game. They've really climbed a lot over the last couple of years. So, it's pretty impressive for them. So, you know, that was one of those things. Boy, we got opinions on 5A today too, which is unusual. But yeah, I mean, Sterling won. That game was close for a while, so that was pretty surprising what had happened there.
Well, looking at 4A, did either of you guys see Hersher? That looked like a decent game. Hersher beats Dixon 38-26. That's one of your teams, Hersher.
Seriously, we actually did not see that game, either one of us. We actually had a former writer cover that game for us. So I have not seen exactly what happened as Seuss. Can you fill him in a little more?
Well, I mean, it was one of those things where it was kind of surprising to me a little bit, because while Dixon was an okay team this year, I mean, they pretty much ran almost everything through a running back by the name of Arthur Cox, and he got hurt early in that game with Dixon actually leading it. And then he went out and came back in, and by the time that Cox had been gone, Hersher kind of reestablished control of that football game. They had a little bit more trouble with Dixon than I expected. I thought that they would not necessarily cruise, but I didn't think it would be a situation until they got a touchdown in the fourth quarter. That game was very much in doubt. I mean, Dixon had an opportunity late to go ahead in that game before Hersher kind of put it away with a late touchdown, but the Hoosier struggled a little bit more than I thought they would. I thought that they would kind of push around this Dixon team, and I guess that goes back to last week a little bit. I thought that since Dixon had struggled with South Shore, one of the public league teams in one of the lower divisions, that they wouldn't have enough to match up with Hoosier, but they did. They gave them an awfully good football game.
Yeah, I really thought that was going to be a 3-4 score game.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, Johnsburg, the number two seed, Hersher's number one in the north. Johnsburg, the number two seed in the north, actually got pushed this week by Manteno, which is probably good for the Skyhawks. They need, you know, somebody to push them a little bit here as they get in the playoffs. It was 49-35. The third quarter in that game was crazy, and at one point, Johnsburg quarterback Riley Buchanan had touchdown passes on four consecutive throws. So that's now Johnsburg moves on and gets Genoa Kingston, which beat Rockford Lutheran 34-26. And in the South, the matchup we've all been waiting for down there will materialize as Althoff and Rochester both cruised.
Yeah, I actually, going back to that Johnsburg game, I sent a message over to our old friend John Stife asking if I was ready to be impressed by Johnsburg. Both Steve and I were over there at that game on Friday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What did you think of that? That must have been a fun third quarter, especially going back.
Yeah, I think it was what, 5 touchdowns in 3 minutes and 31 seconds. I have to say that I was really impressed with Johnsburg offense. Alex Pete looks fantastic. The defense was a bit disappointing, to say the least. They were getting shredded on nearly every play by Manteno quarterback Gavin Zimbelman. I think he had almost 500 yards of total offense by the end of it.
Yeah, and the receiver, I can't think of his name, Calvin. Is it Travell?
Yeah, Travell Talon.
Yeah. It looks like he must be pretty special, too. He had a huge night.
Yeah. He's a good player. The one thing that I would say about Mantino throughout the season has been they were heavily reliant on big plays. And good for them, they have a couple of guys that are pretty good at making them. But, I mean, they abandoned the traditional running back format. I mean, they did not use one. They go straight out of the shotgun. Gavin Zimmelman, their quarterback, carried the ball 29 times, and he was the only person other than one jet sweep with Calvin that carried the football in a running type of a situation. So they're a little unorthodox in that sense, but Calvin's a very good player. He's capable of making defensive backs, especially at that level, look pretty bad at times. So, I mean, there was a time early in the game where I thought that the Johnsburg cornerback was going to be able to kind of contain him, and Calvin proved me incorrect on that assessment pretty quickly. So it was a good night for him. He ended up with over 200 yards receiving in that game. But in the long run, Johnsburg's ability to do a little bit more than just fling out routes down the field, I think, was basically what separated the two teams.
Well, I think we might have been talking about a Mantino win if it wasn't for.
Oh yeah.
If it wasn't for the fact that their special teams were awful. I mean, they gave up two kick returns all the way down inside their own 5-yard line after they had scored, and they also gave Johnsburg a touchdown by Calvin was actually back trying to corral a kickoff, missed it, then went back to pick it up, missed it again, and Johnsburg fell on it and then had only 2 yards to go for a touchdown. So I mean, three touchdowns given away on special teams essentially. I mean, without those, that could have been a different outcome.
Looking at 3A, did either of you guys see the we were talking about last week, did either of you guys see Wilmington 38, Byron 18? Did you see that game?
Yeah, I was at that game.
Did everyone behave? You said there was some bad blood there before.
I think that for the most part it was okay. I think Byron has now seen way more of Owen Weaver than they ever need to ever again in their lives, because he scored 5 touchdowns in that game, including one play which was almost comical unless you were a Byron fan. I mean, he was playing on defense at an outside linebacker position and just promptly went up and literally took the ball away from the Byron ball carrier. It was like he was just holding maybe like a loaf of bread out there for him to take, and he just took it, and then just before anyone realized it, he was 15 yards past anyone else and ran it in for a 70-yard touchdown score. So, I mean, he's a very, very good 3A player, Owen Weaver is, and he showcased it last night. On Saturday night. What happened was, I mean, he set the single school touchdown record for touchdowns in a season. He's now got 38 on the year. And if you know Wilmington football history, you know he has surpassed some very talented names in doing that. Most notably, the guy he broke, record holder Damian Anderson, who was a standout at Northwestern and then later played in the NFL. So, a really impressive job by him. It was close early, but Wilmington just kind of exerted their will and kind of took over in that football game.
So, how does Wilmington stack up with the favorite IC Catholic?
I mean, I'll be honest, not very well, but I don't think anybody in this class does.
Yeah.
It will be a challenge for them. What they will have to do, and they're capable of doing this, is just put together immensely long drives that keep the chains moving and keep the ball away from IC Catholic as much as they possibly can. Because they're usually pretty salty defensively, and they can make some plays, but the key for them is they've just got to, they cannot have short drives and that don't net them points, or IC Catholic it doesn't take them very long to get anything done. I mean, this week against Paxton in the second round, they picked that team apart in seemingly minutes. That's Wilmington's got to play a perfect football game and really play keep away against the Knights. That's the only way that I could see them having success in this game.
As good as this Wilmington team is, I don't think there's any chance this game remains close. I'm not sure there's a team left in the state in 3A that can keep a game competitive against this IC Catholic team.
I don't think so. I mean, I think this is this team might arguably be better than the Bishop McNamara team that steamrolled everybody last year. And I mean, they did it in bone crunching fashion, and Icy Catholic seems to be well on its way to doing even more damage. I mean, that's they're impressive. That's really all you can say about them. I think the other teams are certainly going to give it their best shot, but I think they are outgunned in any matchup that you can line up for the rest of the way.
Anything else that caught your eye in 3A?
No, I think it was pretty much the way I expected it to go. I mean, obviously, there's still a whole bunch of 11-0s in the north part of that bracket, and that's pretty much the way I thought it would almost had to play out with so many 9-0s to start with. So, but it's just unfortunate the way that this bracket came down, because I think a strong case can be made that Wilmington might be the second-best team in 3A. And they're playing a quarterfinal matchup against the best team in 3A, while the southern portion of the bracket has some teams still playing that, to be honest with you, I don't think would match up very well with either one of those two teams. So, just, I mean, kind of the breaks, kind of the way the system goes, but it's one of those things that makes me clamor for 1-32 in every bracket.
All right, well, let's look at 2A, and we mentioned it earlier. Deer Creek Mackinac, 91. Chicago Hope, 70. The previous record was 141 points scored in a game. That was Greenville and Mount Carmel, 71-70 in 2013. So they set the record by 20 points.
Yeah, I dug out a story about it this weekend just because I was confused. I didn't know how that this could happen, but I mean, it just seemed like neither team was capable of stopping the other one for any great length of time. It was a video game. I mean, it was silly. I mean, some of the stat lines that were put up, the rushing totals that were put up by Deer Creek Mackinac were ridiculous. The passing line put up by the Hope quarterback, I think he was either a freshman or a sophomore, was inexplicable. I mean, he had over 500 passing yards on the game, and a bunch of throws for scores. I mean, it was one of those games that, like, I mean, I never would have guessed it from these two. I mean, obviously they're from polar opposite types of conferences, but it certainly was one of those games where you look at it after the fact and you almost can't believe what you're looking at.
I'm looking at this at these 2A scores. A lot of really good games here. It looks like 1, 2, 3, 4, like 4 or 5 games that were within one score of each other. Got games like Moreau, Forsyth, and El Dorado, Shelbyville, and Minden Unity, St. Thomas, Moore, and Bismarck Henning. Look like some really good competitive games there in 2A.
Yeah, and I think that stems from the fact that this kind of looked like a wide open class on paper. What the biggest surprise to me of the week was that Tri-Valley lost, and DuCoin kind of handled them in that game. So it was a pretty impressive feat for them to win that game. But a lot of close games and a lot of pretty good football teams playing in the second round of the playoffs in 2A.
Yeah, I looked kind of sideways at the St. Thomas Moore score. I know it's been a couple of years since they were in the Sangamon Valley Conference, but that was a program that was nowhere near heading to a quarterfinal game, and to see them beat a traditional power in Bismarck Henning kind of surprised me.
Yeah, and I think that some of that stems from the fact that St. Thomas Moore is kind of has a weird schedule now, and they play Tolono, and they play St. Joe Ogden, and I think their schedule does a nice job of preparing them for sliding down into 2A because they play some schools from bigger divisions earlier in the tournament. So it's a nice win for them. I saw Bismarck Henning real early in the year, and I thought that they had turned a corner. Not to say that the losing to St. Thomas Moore is any shame, but I was a little surprised too, though, that St. Thomas Moore beat them.
So what caught your eye in 1A this week? The two top seeds, Ottawa Marquette in the north, Tuscola in the south, both win. Both the number twos, Forreston and Decatur St. Teresa, get through to the quarters. What else caught your eye there?
Well, I thought personally that I was monitoring that St. Teresa game the whole time, and it seemed like Athens had a real good chance to take them out. And they didn't quite finish it off, but I think we're heading towards a collision course down there in the bottom of the bracket between two teams that played earlier this year in Tuscola and Decatur St. Teresa, and Tuscola won handily. And then in the top, I mean, Ottawa Marquette seems to be playing with fire every week. It'll be interesting to see how they deal with an Akron team who seems to have a knack for winning games in the postseason. So that should be a pretty good game, I think. And then that Forest and Lena Winslow game was a good game during the regular season. I'm pretty sure it'll be a good game this time around, too.
Yeah, what's Ottawa Marquette won its two games by a total of 9 points? Is that right?
Yeah, they won their first round game 9-6.
9-6, yeah.
And then won 26-20. And the interesting thing about that to me is that now they will face three different teams from the same conference on their playoff route. So, and they're gradually getting better in quality. So if Ottawa Marquette doesn't tighten it up this week, I think they're going to have a problem. And then if they happen to win, they're going to run into another team from the Northwest of the Illini. So they're getting real familiar with that conference. You know, maybe they should just sit in on the all-conference meeting at the end of the year because they'll have a lot of opinions.
Okay, guys. Well, let's wrap it up with our one game that, or a game or two maybe, that you really intrigue you this week. Kyle, you go first.
Well, if I didn't have an area game to go to on Saturday, I'd be heading down to the St. Louis area because Rochester versus Belleville Altoff in a 4A rematch is going to be a lot of fun. Just two teams that, even though they're at the 4A level, just have a ton of big-time talent. And I don't be surprised to see 48 to 40, some ridiculous score coming out of that game, but it should be a fun shootout.
Steve?
Yeah, I'm just going to make my formal apology to St. Lawrence and say that I'd be interested in that St. Lawrence-Lamont game in the 6A quarters. I think that's going to be a pretty good one. That's just a matchup of two programs now that have established themselves as kind of being near the top of that class on a year-to-year basis.
I think one that interests me is Rockford-Auburn, and we talked about it a little bit last week. Dan Appino, the former Boylan coach, going over there, and they made the quarters last year. They're back in the quarters this year. Not a traditional, real strong football program, but they're becoming one now and with Coach Appino. And Plainfield North, the team that you guys saw that beat Bradley Bourbonnais, neither's ever been to a semi, so somebody's going where they've never been before. And North hadn't even won a playoff game until 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that's really surprised me, to be completely honest with you. That they've established themselves as a pretty decent program. I mean, I know it doesn't have expansive history because Plainfield North hasn't been around that long, but you know, Tim Kaine runs a good program, and you can tell they're well schooled. They know what they're doing, and it's was surprising to me to find out that this was obviously the first time they'd won a second round playoff game as well on Saturday. So that's, you're right. I believe that will be a very interesting football game between those two teams. And like I said before, I would not be the least bit surprised to see Plainfield North in a semifinal after what they did to Bradley.
All right, guys. Well, thanks a lot. We'll talk again next week where we'll talk about some quarterfinal football games.